Tarlhurst End Podcast.
Read the blog
on thetarlhurstend.com.
Hello and welcome to the Tarlhurst End Podcast Extra in association with the Reading Post for May 30th. My name's Dan Wimbush and I'm the editor of thetarlhurstend.com, an independent Reading fan site. And I'm delighted to say I'm joined once again by Reading Post Reading reporter Charles Watts. Charles, hello. It's been a while.
It has been a while, yes. How are you, Dan?
Yeah, I'm not so bad, thank you. I mean, the last time we sat down to record this show, we were looking ahead to the Burnley game and possible playoff permutations, and then all maybe we'll get up and not quite so good a picture as we sit down today.
No, it seems a long time ago now, that doesn't it, that Burnley game and all the drama that followed for that 90 minutes.
Got a lot to talk about in this show, obviously, with off-field issues, but just very quickly, obviously, in the main edition of the show, we spent 2 hours dissecting the season, but I haven't had a chance to speak to you yet. What were your overall impressions on the season just gone? Do you think Reading got what they deserved, or did they maybe deserve that playoff spot?
No, I think they got what they deserved, to be honest. Obviously, it was painful the way it all happened on the final day and going down to the last minute, but I think when you look at it and you look at the home form especially, and what was it, one win since the end of January at home, and you know, I think you can't really complain when you miss out when you've had a run of form like that. I think they were quite fortunate the teams around them were slipping up at the same time, but no, I don't think we can have too many complaints. Obviously it wasn't a nice way for the season to end, and it looked like we'd done enough, and then obviously to have it sort of taken away at the death because of events elsewhere, but I think no one can really have too many complaints.
Complaint is that sadly QPR managed to get through the playoffs in slightly, I wouldn't say sneaky circumstances, but they certainly stole it right at the end. I suppose looking at the squad overall, I'd back them all season to go up, but a little bit harsh on Derby.
Oh, I think it's very harsh on Derby. It was daylight robbery, wasn't it? But then I suppose Derby have only got themselves to blame while they played against 10 men for the final half an hour, dominated the entire match, but couldn't score. And I suppose maybe you look at that experience that we've all almost taken the mickey out of QPR for a little bit, and old Premier League players who, do they really want to do it in the Championship? But I suppose in the end, that probably helps them in a situation like that, in a big game. They'd been there, done it, they didn't panic, they defended well and then nicked it on the break. And so, yeah, I suppose fair play to them. But given the fact that their wage bill's drastically more than one of the teams that played in the Champions League final later that night, I don't think they can celebrate too much about going up through the Championship playoffs. It was hardly the greatest achievement in football.
Looking at the three teams that went up, and obviously the teams relegated as well and coming up from League One, but especially those teams coming down from the Premier League, do you think it's going to be an even tougher league next season?
I don't know if it's about even tough. I mean, the Championship's always tough, isn't it? It doesn't really matter who's in it, and it's just always going to be a difficult league. You're going to have to scrap for your life. You're going to have to rely on your squad to get you through tough times because of the amount of games you're playing, but I wouldn't say it's going to be any tougher. I think looking at the teams that have come down and come up, there's some quite nice trips there. I think for a fan, it's going to be quite an enjoyable season next year. I think everyone's looking forward to, you know, places like Brentford for Reading fans. That'll be a very good away trip. I think we're all praying that Leighton Orient were going to get it done against Rotherham. Unfortunately, it didn't work out that way, because I think we all could have fancied a trip to East London. It would have been quite a nice one as well.
Obviously, another trip to South Wales back on the calendar, and we'll come on to Cardiff a little bit later on, but With Reading not getting into the playoffs, obviously that's a chain of events in motion financially. We've been talking about takeover speculation throughout this show all season, and obviously nothing's come to pass yet. So, very quickly, there's been lots of rumours bounded about people talking about things like administration and Reading haven't got enough money to survive X, Y and Z. As we sit here now, how do you understand the financial position of the football club?
Well, it's not good. I don't think anyone can say otherwise. It's getting very serious. I mean, something has to happen very soon, or the talk about administration, which have been rumours up to now, is suddenly going to become very much a reality, or certainly staring towards that reality. Obviously, we've got the tax man involved now as well, which when that happens, then it sort of the seriousness goes up a notch or two, because they don't hang around. They want their money and they will chase their money. And if they don't get it, they will issue winding up orders. So there's very much an issue now that has to be addressed. We've started to see that happen already this week with the quick sale of Alfie to Cardiff. And I think if something doesn't happen in terms of the takeover fairly soon, that will certainly not be the first player we see quickly shown out the door.
There were rumours and a couple of pieces floating around a couple of weeks ago that Anton Zagarevic had actually handed back his shares to Sir John Medeski even. Is that correct? Does he now completely out of the football club?
Yep, he's completely out of the football club. He handed his shares back and resigned from the board in January. I think it was pretty much the last day in January, maybe January the 30th, that he did that. Anton is certainly not around anymore. It was all obviously kept very hush-hush by Reading. It's only just emerged in the last couple of weeks, like you say, as a lot of this takeover stuff starts coming out. Why Reading kept it completely under wraps, we have no idea. I mean, as a journalist, I've spoken to Reading many a time since January and had conversations with people who have obviously been keeping up the facade that Anton's still around and could even possibly come back one day, and obviously that's not the case. So why they've kept that under wraps, I don't know. It's something that I'd certainly like to ask the club, and not just me, other journalists around here would like to ask the club, but unfortunately the club are not talking. The barriers are firmly up. No one's being put forward to talk to the press at all on an official basis, so it's a question that we're gonna have to wait to ask.
But I mean, it's my understanding, obviously I'm not an expert in these things, understanding that Reading do still owe Zingarevich or TSI or a combination of both some money, which is why the sale is important.
Yeah, no, they do. They do. Obviously, TSI, one, you know, have got big, have taken out loans, and Reading owe those loans back to TSI once the sale's complete. I mean, that's in the form of debt. So obviously, the club is pretty much going to go for a quid now. But obviously, there's the debts on top of that, and a lot of that is owed to TSI and to John Daisky and to various other parties. So TSI will still benefit out of this sale. So Anton Zingarevich will still benefit out of this sale, but. Other than that, he is now out the picture, although his two men, I was going to say something else then, are still in very much in the picture at Reading and holding an awful lot of power as well, and in Obolensky and Chris Samuelson. So although Anton's gone himself, his legacy is still very much still around the club.
Obviously, with the current financial situation as it is, and as you mentioned, the tax man starting to chase Reading for money, that something had to give, and the first thing that's gone... Well, obviously, Reading released a number of first-team players a few weeks ago. That was maybe not really a surprise, the likes of Ledgerwood going. But the first person that's gone for money is Adam Lafondra. And for Reading's goalscorer, within weeks of the season finishing, shows just how bad the situation must be.
Indeed. Indeed, it does. I was surprised. Obviously, I was expecting someone to... a few people had out the door. I wasn't expecting Alfred to be the first one, I have to say. But Cardiff have been interested since January, and they've come back in for him and got a deal done. Obviously, there was a lot of importance for Reading to make this sale. There was a bill coming up that I think needs to be paid today, and Reading demanded 1.5 million up front from Cardiff to be paid by today, so they can pay this due. I think it's to HMRC, but it's something, certainly to someone. And so in terms of that, Reading's hand was forced. They've even made it clear to Alfie that they didn't want him to go, but they had to do it. It was a necessity for the club.
Put a few rumours about the fee. So you think Reading got at least 1.5?
I think, from what I'm told, they got more than 1.5. I know from Cardiff's end, it seems to be this sort of 1 million figure coming around. I'm told it was considerably more than that. And I'd be very surprised if it was just 1 million. But I am told it was considerably more than that. And I think it's supposed to be totaling a lot more, sort of looking in the 2.2 to 2.5 million category, with even add-ons on top of that possibly. So I don't think it's anywhere near the 1 million figure that seems to be being bandied around at the other end of the M4.
It's obviously an impossible question to answer fully at the moment, because we don't know the ins and outs. But how much do you think Reading will miss Lafondra, just sort of in isolation, if Nigel Atkins was allowed to build the squad as he wants? Do you think he'll be a big miss for the club?
Honestly, I don't think he'll be a massive miss. I think, you know, he's a very good player. He does what we all expect him to do. He scores goals when he's given a chance. He didn't have the best of seasons this season. I think even he admits that. He missed a fair few chances that you'd expect him to stick away. It wasn't helped, I suppose. He was in and out of the side so much this year. I don't think Nigel Atkins really fancied him. I think if Nigel Atkins had, you know, money to play with and could set his vision out for his team, would Alfie be leading that line? I don't think he would be. I think Nigel would much fancy a sort of mobile, quick attacker, someone like Nucky Wells, who he desperately wanted to bring in January and just wasn't given the funds to do it. Someone who, you know, will just run the channels all day long, is mobile, he really causes defenders problems with his pace and his movement. And so I don't think it'll be a massive, massive miss if Reading are able to do something in themselves in the transfer market. But if they're not, you've got to say it's going to be a huge miss, because they've only got Pavel Pogrebnyak left up front. So you're going into the season with one striker. So I think that's a question we'll have to sort of put on the back burner till August, really, to see just how much he will be missed.
Well, Nigel Atkins' ability to rebuild that squad is going to be largely dependent on this takeover. We sort of talked about how the club finances are now, But there may be some good news around the corner for Reading. Two serious parties apparently interested in the club. You can just sort of explain who these two parties are and where we stand at the moment.
There are. Okay, we'll start with Teddy. Teddy Sagi is an Israeli billionaire, absolutely made of money, hugely self-made billionaire as well. I think he was born in around 72, which is not that much younger than me, and he's worth over 2 billion. That makes me sad. And made his money. He's made it in sort of shady, well, you say shady areas, it's legitimate business, to be fair. I know there's a piece, if you look on the Daily Mail website about him, it's a complete hatchet job, really, from the Mail, I have to say. But he's made it through Playtech, which is a gaming software development company, it builds sort of sites for online casinos, poker rooms, sports betting. So, he's made it through gambling, which I think people sometimes look at and think, is that a great business? But it's legitimate business, and he's made his money out of it and gone from strip
to strip. At Stoke, any harm?
Well, exactly. It's a legitimate business. I use betting websites each week. I think we all do. So, I certainly wouldn't turn my nose up on him because of that. And he's not just betting either. He's got plenty of other businesses. He's very much into real estate. He just bought the Camden Stables Market. I don't know if you've been out to that state, North London, obviously a famous market. He spent $400 million on that just a couple of months ago, really, and has got big plans to make it even more successful as a tourism and entertainment venue. He's a very, very successful man. He sold 15% of Playtech, actually, a couple of months ago for $325 million just before he did that Stables Market deal. So I imagine it's because of that. And he's got some huge money on the table and coming just from various deals in the pipeline as well. So, buying Reading would be small change for him. Obviously, the thing with him as well, I don't think it's just so much a football business deal. If he does go through, he's got big plans for the area. As I said, he's into real estate. He's into the whole sort of shopping centres, that sort of thing. And he's got plans for that on the Medeski Stadium car park, which leaves us all sort of scratching our heads thinking exactly how that would be possible and everything. And also for Hogwood Park as well. Obviously, with the other training ground move, the move to the new one over at Bearwood leaves the space that Reading have got at Hogwood. Some of that, I think, has to go to the armed forces as well, but there's obviously going to be plenty left, and he's got plans for flats. So it's a massive, he's got massive plans. He's typical Teddy Sagi from what you look at him, hugely ambitious. The fact he flies in and lands in a helicopter in the Medeski Stadium car park kind of sums him up. Obviously, he doesn't seem to do anything by halves. He's very much sees what he wants, goes and gets it, and will be successful out of it. So, it's a very exciting prospect, someone like that coming in and taking over. But I suppose people like yourself, I imagine, you may be a little bit wary about exactly what his plans in terms of football are, or is there more on the agenda for him?
Well, you never particularly like a person who wants to talk about turning into a business venture, because ultimately, how can you make money from a football club, especially like Reading? That would be the one area of concern.
You can't really, unless you're somehow driving through to the Champions League and start making the money out of that. But if you're going to drive a club from this level to the Champions League, you're going to have to invest almost about £1 billion in the playing side to even get up there competing. So you're not going to make any money, are you?
Well, there's one other party involved as well. Explain that one a bit more.
Yes, Mohit Burman. Now, this one's very much seems to be on the sporting side of things. He's got a huge background in sport. Indian businessman, majority owner of Kings 11 Punjab, who are currently top of the IPL over in India. He's got interest in hockey over there as well, badminton, kabaddi, very much a sporting man. Very successful businessman as well. Got plenty of businesses over there. Family wealth is huge. His wealth as well, I'm told his personal worth is around £1 billion himself, but with family worth as well in India, I think it totals around £5 billion with his father's money, his brother's money, and it's a very much a sort of family orientated business. But like I said, I don't think people need to worry about the whole Anton Boris thing. He's got.
I was about to say, family money doesn't mean much to me anymore.
No, but he has got his own huge sort of personal wealth as well of about £1 billion, I'm told. And like I said, the whole sporting thing, to me, it draws me to him more than it does to Teddy, just because he seems to, he doesn't want to build flats and hotels and everything like that. He just wants to buy a football club and run it. And he accepts that he'll probably end up losing a bit of money to doing it, because that's what he does with his other sports companies, but he just loves sport and wants to get involved in English football. So, you know, the two very different people bidding for the club who would probably take it down two very different paths, but I suppose you look at it, they're two quite exciting ones as well.
How serious, though, do you consider this interest to be? Because obviously, you know, we've talked in previous shows about the people that have been shown around and been seen at games. Is this passing interest or is this really serious? There's bids on the table.
Oh, it's very serious. I think there's four bids on the table as well. I think there's American consortium and an Irish consortium as well who are there talking as well. Who they are, I'm not sure. I've never been able to find anything about them. This American consortium has been floating around for months, and it seems like these mythical people. But I'm very much told that they are there as well, and there are bids on the table for them. But there's been plenty of bids on the table, I'm told, as well in the last few months. Richard Irabani was desperate to get the deal done. He spent a month over in London, the Uruguayan businessman, trying to get the deal done before just growing too frustrated and pulling out because of all the red tape he's having to go through to try and get it done. And that's where we come back to the TSI legacy and these two directors, Chris Samuelson and Andrew Obolensky, who own MTI, who are basically the exclusive agents who are trying to sort of vet the deal, get the deal together before putting it to Sir John Medeski. And it seems like these two are very much a sticking point that a lot of people can't get past to get a deal done.
It can. This might be a silly question. I apologise a bit, but can they not just go directly to Sir John? Is there? I suppose.
Well, it seems like that as part of the TSI deal, as part of TSI pulling out and Anton pulling out, that these two were given the exclusive mandate to sell the club. And so everything goes through them. So John, I presume, is sort of kept in the picture of how things are going. But it seems like until you can get past these two men and can agree to their terms, that things aren't going forward. Mohit Burman is desperate to buy the football club, I'm told. Everything's in place. He'll pay the tax bill off straight away. It'll all be done within three working days. But he will not. He does not want to work with these two. He does not want to keep them on the payroll for 2 years. Or in fact, it'll be 3 years because there's a one-year notice period as well, paying them £20,000 a month. So £40,000 in total to their MTI company for doing what exactly? And I'm not surprised. I mean, it's not even that much money to him. But as a businessman, why would you keep two people on who you don't need on the board? And why have they got this power? And you know, I'd love to speak to Chris Samuelson and ask him this, but it's just not happening at the moment. But the more I look at MTI and the position that they've somehow managed to position themselves in, the more power they have got. They have done very, very well to get themselves in this position.
As fans, all we can do is, unfortunately, shrug our shoulders. And I mean, there's so little we can do. I mean, you could talk about protests and things like that. But as you say, at the end of the day, they've got the power.
It seems that way. But it just doesn't seem right to me.
No.
At all that they can have this power. And it seems like Teddy Sagi is quite willing, I'm told, that he will keep them on. I suppose with the amount of money that he's got, he can almost make them irrelevant anyway, even if he does come in. But it seems like he's the favoured choice at the moment. But I've heard that for a week and still nothing's happened.
Yeah, I was about to say, I mean, what sort of timescale are we looking at now? Do you expect this to drag on for a long time?
Well, I don't think it can. I don't think it can, to be honest. It's something needs to happen fairly soon, or there's going to be some very serious repercussions for the club, because there's debts that need to be paid, and they need to be paid soon. And if no one takes over, these debts they're going to struggle to pay them. And so something has to happen soon. We really seem to be coming to a D-Day at the moment with the club and the takeover situation. And I just hope it gets resolved. I really do.
Yeah, I don't think you're alone. I think there's 20,000 other Reading fans that think exactly the same way. Well, I suppose the only other way to pay off the bills is to sell players. There's been a few transfer rumours around. Gareth McCleary and Alex McCarthy in particular. Alex McCarthy is an interesting one because, obviously, you ran a story a few weeks ago that he was linked with Swansea. They've just gone out and signed Lucas Fabianski from Arsenal. So that would theoretically close off that avenue for him. But it does open up another destination, Arsenal. Could you see him going there?
I could see him going there. They certainly fancy him. He's on their list. Whether it'll happen, I don't know. There's almost a bit of a keeper merry-go-round about to start now. It was going to take one move for it to happen, and now it's going to start. And obviously that first move is now Fabianski, who's gone to Swansea, who was very much in the hunt for McCarthy as well. They've obviously opted for a free transfer, and a very good free transfer at that, in Fabianski, who has turned into an excellent goalkeeper now at the age of 29. He wants to go and be a first choice somewhere, and he's got that chance now. And obviously that opens the door for someone to go into Arsenal. Now, Arsenal, they're not just looking for one keeper, they're going to be looking for two goalkeepers now, because their third choice is also, he's been on loan from Italy and he's going back to Italy this summer. So they're very much in the market for a keeper. Obviously, there's a few being linked. They've been linked with John Ruddy recently, David Marshall from Cardiff, but that was £15 million price tag quoted for that. And I can't imagine that Arsene Wenger, who barely pulls his checkbook out to buy a striker at £12 million, will spend £15 million on a second choice goalkeeper. So I just can't see that working out. And then you've got, obviously, Alex McCarthy, who Arsenal have been watching all season. Steve Rowley, the chief scout, has been at the Medeski countless times this season. And he's very much on their list. You know, whether they opt for that, I don't know. Whether McCarthy would want to go there and be a second-choice goalkeeper, I don't know. But I'm not expecting McCarthy to be at Reading at the start of the season.
At least they got Federici, although Federici himself was tweeting about new fresh starts and things like that. So whether that's a fresh start at Reading or not, we don't know. I mean, he's paid a price this season, obviously missing out on the World Cup. I thought that was a bit of a turn-up for him, and he must be absolutely gutted.
Yeah, he's paid a huge price, hasn't he, really? And to be fair to Feds as well, he's been an absolute professional during all of this. He could easily sort of thrown his toys out of the pram, tried to move. You know, whether he did try and move or not, I don't know, in January. I imagine he probably was quite keen to get out on loan at least, but it didn't happen. But he's kept his silence. He hasn't hit out at the club. You know, he very much loves this club, and he's, you know, he's part of the furniture, really, isn't he, as well? And, you know, if Alex McCarthy does go, then you can't have a better goalkeeper, really, to bring in and promote back to number one than Adam.
Absolutely not. Any other whispers or rumours? Obviously, I imagine the in column is looking pretty slim right now.
Yeah, the in column, I have to say, I'm not. there's absolutely nothing going on. It's all very much out. Swansea, keen on Gareth McCleary, wanted him in January. Will I imagine, I'd be surprised if they don't come back in for him again in the summer. Jordan, they were linked to Arsenal. It's something I hadn't heard, I have to say, but it was reported by John Cross at the Mirror, who is almost, you can't get more in at Arsenal, really, as a journalist than John. He's grew up at the Islington Gazette, and he's had 20 years following the club. He's very much in, and if he says Arsenal are interested in someone, it tends to be true. That's just a strange move for me if that was to happen with Kieran Gibbs's left back. They've got the Spanish Monreal's choice left back. So, yeah, would it be a good move for Jordan? I think it'd be an awful move, really. But, you know, there's certainly going to have to be some interest batted away from the club in him. It's just anyone, really. That's the thing with what's going on at the moment. You can't really say no one's going to still be there next season. You know, everyone's going to have a price tag at the moment.
I'm just saying the same things, but it's true. We just have to sit and wait and hope. But I hate to leave it on a down note, but that's what we're going to do. I suppose to try and lift it then, there are a couple of bids on the table, and it's not all doom and gloom. This isn't just heading one way for Reading. We certainly could be sitting down talking in 3 or 4 weeks' time about, let's look at some transfer targets, new era.
Oh, very much so. So if one of these guys comes in, and let's hope they do, you know, they'd have bought the club, the debt's going to be paid off, and you're going to have two billionaires, you know, in whoever it is, in charge of the club, and, you know, no debt, and players, you know, a decent squad already, a stadium, a great academy. You know, it's a great opportunity for someone to come in, and I just want someone to do it. And I don't understand, well, I do understand, I'm beginning to understand anyway, why it's not been happening, but someone just needs to get something signed and get this club moving in the right direction, because it's a fantastic club, it's got fantastic facilities, it's got some great young players there, and it just needs someone to come in and take it forward and move it in the direction that we all want it to go.
So you can't say anything more than that. And with that, I suppose we'll leave it there. Charles, thanks very much for joining us. We'll get in touch again in a few weeks' time, record another one of these. But in the meantime, where can people follow you on Twitter?
Usual mate, which is @Charles_Watts.
And will we be continuing the web chat Wednesdays?
Yes, very much so. It was the busiest one I've ever had on Wednesday. It was an absolute madness.
We'll head over to getreading.co.uk to join in one of those Wednesday lunchtime. As for us, you can check out plenty more content on thetarlesden.com. And please drop us an email over at thetarlesden@gmail.com. That's it for us, and we'll speak to you again soon. Take care.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast.
Read the blog
on thetarlhurstend.com.